You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
After God.
So it's been a rough few months for you. And I'm not saying that in some sort of like, hey, this is how he's setting up the point today. Like, it has. I mean, talk to the people around you. Ask them about the family members that they have lost. Ask them about the sickness that they have endured. Ask them about the heartbreak in their lives, the struggles that they've had with their kids, the challenges that they've had at work. And maybe you don't need to ask the people around you for those things. Maybe you just need to look in a mirror. Because life is hard. There are hard times. There are hard things that we go through. And it is, well, it's not a surprise. It's part of life. It's part of who we are. It's part of, well, frankly, our sin. And as it gets really quiet, I wanted to talk to you about disasters. Because in our lives, like, you may have been, I don't know, maybe you lived through an actual natural disaster. Maybe you lived in California during a great earthquake. Maybe you have lived in the Southeast during a hurricane. Maybe you live in the Midwest, have been there through a tornado. We actually went through a tornado in Dallas when we were living down there. And those are like for real big things. But in our lives, the hard times in those moments may seem like disasters. And I don't need to tell you that. Like, it's easy to look at someone else and go like, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal. But you know what? When we're in those moments are disasters for us. And so we're going to look at continuing on here with this series. We've been looking at the life of David. And we're going to continue with that today. And we're going to look at a part of David's life that probably, I'm getting a little feedback here, sorry, that probably is not too familiar with you. Last week we talked about David and Goliath. Everybody knows about David and Goliath. And just to catch you up on that, I mean, David beat Goliath. He won. He defeated Goliath in an amazing act of faith, not in David, but an amazing act of faith in God. And if you weren't here last week, you can go to mc3church.org, click on Listen to the Point, and listen to that. Because I would encourage you, not because I'm teaching it, but because it's such a powerful message of faith and what God can do when we have faith and trust in Him. And so we're going to talk about a part of David's life where people don't necessarily remember or know about. And it's easy to forget that David had a part of his life that was a disaster. But before we do that, I want to introduce you to this guy here. There. That is, technically, is ECC1, which is the name that was given to this eaglet that was born as an American bald eagle. And this is actually in this is 2017 is the picture that you're looking at here. His parents were Liberty, who is the female, and Justice is the male, appropriate names for a pair of bald eagles, American bald eagles, living in Washington, D.C. I mean, come on. And they've raised this eaglet here. They've been in that nest for about 11 years, nesting there. And this nest is 110 feet up off of the ground at the Metropolitan Police Academy in Southeast Washington, D.C. And this little ECC1, they were looking for names for it at the time. I don't know what the name is now. He probably has a name. But at the time, he was ECC1. And this little ECC1, this little eaglet, is about to go through a disaster. And it is a for real disaster. There was an EF0, which is not very much, but an EF0, which is a recorded tornado that strikes this nest where little ECC1 is sitting there. And so he is about to be in the midst of a true disaster. And again, you know, the scale goes up to EF5. Which is, you know, total devastation. But EF0 means that it was actually strong enough to be rated as a real tornado. And so little ECC1 is going to go through this disaster in his life. But I want you to watch what happens as the disaster comes upon him? So I don't know if you could catch, obviously that camera is mounted on the tree, and if you're a motion sick type person, it went back and forth because the tornado came through. And actually this video continues for another, see that was 2.5 minutes, so it goes on for another 23 minutes. So given that, you know, time is an issue. But that eagle, and I'm not an eagleologist, so I don't know if that was mom or dad, if that was Liberty or Justice, but one of his parents, I don't even know if he's a he, maybe ECC1 is a she, I don't know. But eaglet parent comes in, and as soon as the disaster is coming, it comes to the nest and puts little ECC1 under his wings, her wings, and sat there through the duration of the storm, through the duration of this minor but tornado, this disaster that came through. And I want you to understand that when we're in the midst of disasters, and again, whatever that looks like, you can't judge someone else's situation and say, oh, that's not a disaster. No, to you it is a disaster. In the midst of your hurt, in the midst of your pain, in the midst of the trouble, in the midst of the challenge, in the midst of the frustration, in the midst of the disappointment, your Father, your God, wants to cover you in the shadow of His wings. And little ECC1 there could have just jumped out and be like, nah, I'm out. This is annoying. It smells funny under here. And been like, ah, you don't know what you're doing. And would have possibly been killed. But when ECC1 chose to rest under the wings of its parent, of its father, it was protected. And so the point that I want you guys to look at, understand today, is this. We're talking about David, who is a man that was known as a man after God's own heart. And so today I want you to understand that when you're after God, if you want to be considered a person who is after God's heart, when you're after God, you rest for effect. You rest in Him in the middle of your disaster. And this is huge because we want to fix it. We want to jump out. We want to be like, nah, I'll solve this. We want to blame. We want to whatever. And sometimes we just need to rest and trust that God is sovereign over everything, even in our darkest times. We need to trust that we are indeed who He says we are, that we are His children and He cares for us. So we're going to look at this story in David's life, and I'll just give you the heads up right now. We are covering 12 chapters of 1 Samuel. So it's going to be, we should have you out by 3. There was a note by the door. I hope you saw it. We posted it on Twitter, like any of you ever actually go to Twitter. But we're going to be covering 12 chapters. But I want to set up the stage. So again, last week, David was victorious. David wasn't just victorious because David was an awesome hunter-killer guy. He was victorious because God used him and his faith and his little, well, big, but stone, not armor, not suits, not spears, to take down the giant that no one else was willing to touch. And the reason David did this, he said, it's not because of me. It's not about your weapons, Goliath. It's because you come against God. And that's the issue. So here is David. And please, 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 please listen to me here. David did everything right. You need to get this. Because it's easy for us to get this assumption that like, well, I did everything perfect, God. Why isn't this going my way? I just want you to know there's no promise that doing everything perfect will make things go your way. Just understand that. And just because you did things right doesn't mean it'll go your way. Also, it doesn't mean if things aren't going your way, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're an awful evil, well, you are an awful evil sinner, we all are, but it doesn't mean that you did something necessarily like, oh, God's getting me back. Just understand that the disasters come. And so here you've got David just being victorious. And then the very next chapter, chapter 18, why don't we hit the house lights so you guys can look at your Bibles. We have paper Bible. Somebody back there want to hit that? There we go. If you have YouVersion, we're in the Old Testament. Tap on Old Testament. Tap on 1 Samuel. If you don't have YouVersion, it is free. It is a Bible app. It gives you every translation out there. It's pretty awesome. But here we are in this next chapter. Okay, and it said that that Saul, which we didn't read here, but Saul brought David into his house. He's like, dude, I want this guy with me now. He was doing a part-time gig where he was playing the harp for Saul. We talked about that a little bit last week. And now he's like, I want David here. Like, this is the place. And so David would be kind of like, hey, this guy's pretty good. So he's going to start sending him kind of out to do some different missions. And picking up on verse 5, it says, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. Remember, David, as a child, probably about 5 years earlier than this, give or take, was anointed to become the next king. He was chosen by God through Samuel to become the next king. And we talked about the very first week. Again, if you weren't here, this series builds on each other, so it's really helpful if you have a chance to go back to listen to it online at mc3church.org. Saul puts David in charge of his troops and says, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing. Because that's what happens. You would come back from battle, the king would be in front, and everyone would honor the king for leading his troops into battle, which we'll find out later. There was a time when a king didn't lead his troops into battle, and that was a problem, but we'll get to that spoiler. So he's leading the people into battle, coming back from battle, and there's a ceremony. There's the big, the ticker tape parade. Welcome home! And so they're here to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands! Woo, Saul! Woo, Saul! Yeah, yeah, yeah! Unfortunately, for Saul, that wasn't the end of the chant. And David! Yeah, David! David has slain his tens of thousands. Whoop, whoop. Raise the roof for David. Saul, yeah, okay. But David! And so the people are cheering, not for the king leading them back from battle, but from this shepherd boy. This guy that is kind of the runt, certainly not old enough. Then they're now cheering for this guy, David. And I need to go faster because we've got 12 chapters. So it continues on here in the next verse there. It says, Saul was very angry. We're going to find that Saul has some anger, ego issues here. It says, this refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but with me, only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? He's after the throne. Now, understand, nobody really knew except for David's family that he had been anointed as the next king, that God had chosen to be the one someday. And as we said that very first week of the series, this is a long journey before he actually gets there. We automatically think it's like, hey, you're the king. Yay, I'm the king, crown. Nope, a long journey. So it says, from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Now things are changing. Before we're like, yeah, I like David. Now it's like, wait a second, this guy's after my throne. This guy's encroaching on my territory. He's getting my glory. He's getting the things that I deserve. This is not right. I am the king, and it is good to be the king. So the very next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul, and we talked about that before the Holy Spirit left, and an evil spirit came, and I didn't actually talk much about it, but David had to go play the harp for him to kind of ease the pain from this spirit. And we're also losing our projector, by the way. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. So here's the dude playing the harp so he feels better. And he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll take this spear and I'll try to kill David with it. And he missed him twice. Like, David's a patient guy. I don't know. But he's there. He's like, he missed him twice. He's like, bring, 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 and they're like, wah, bring, 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 hurrah! He keeps doing this, but we'll get to that later. So at this point, Saul is jealous. Saul is worried about David. And now begins what I'm calling David's disaster. Because David is about to plummet from, yay, everybody, tens of thousands, we love you, David. You killed the giant. You had faith in God. God honored your faith in him. It wasn't about you. It was about God. Some trust in chariots and horses, but you trust in the name of the Lord your God. And now he enters this moment where he's in the middle of his disaster. And I want you to understand, as we teach this, as I go through these passages, these next 11 or so passages, verse 11 or so chapters, think about your disaster. Think about, because we're going to get to the point here at the end where we're going to talk about this idea of resting in God. But a lot of times we look at our situation and say, well, God doesn't deserve that. Or why would I trust him? Or why would he do this to me? Or whatever, whatever, whatever. And I just want to make a case that David had a really good reason not to trust or follow or submit or rest in God. Because he did the right thing. So David's disaster, here's some things. David did the right thing, yet... there we go. David did the right thing, yet he loses his family and friends. And 1 Samuel 19 through 20 is basically about him. he's then going later, another episode, you know, maybe a couple days, maybe a couple weeks later. He's playing the harp for Saul again. And again, Saul picks up his spear and throws it at David and misses him. And David's like, that's it, I'm out. And so David flees. He leaves Saul and runs away from there. And he leaves the palace. He leaves his wife because he was actually one of Saul's daughters. And that's an interesting story. If you're a man, it kind of makes you go, oh, that's an interesting story. About foreskins and 200 Philistines. And that's how you say, yes, I want to marry her. Here you go. Have these things. read it. It's in the Bible. So his wife that he had, he loses his wife because he has to leave her behind. And then he also has his friend Jonathan, which is Saul's son. And his friend Jonathan, they were really close friends. They were really close. And Jonathan says, hey, you know, I'll go talk to my dad for you, David. Like, I'll work this out. And so he goes to Saul and says, you know, Saul, dad, what's going on? David didn't do anything wrong. He's like, I know. I don't promise. I promise not to hurt him. I won't do anything bad to him. He's like, but dad, you know, and then it says that Saul then took a spear. And of course, as he does, he hurled it at Jonathan, at his own son who missed it. And then Jonathan went to David and said, like, nah, he's done. Sorry, I got the spear too. So that's it. And so so he had to leave all these things behind. Like, he had to leave his friends. He had to leave his family. He had to leave them behind. And it wasn't like, hey, I'm going away, I'll come back to visit. This was, I need to get out of here, and there's probably never a chance for me to talk to you again. And it's interesting, I just want you to know this, because this is going to come to play a couple of weeks from now. But David and Jonathan, Jonathan's like, David, look, I know that you're going to be the next king. I know God has got his hand on you. God is doing something here. He said, can you just promise me this? That you will, well, I'll just say it the right way, that you will, care for my line, care for my family, the generations after me. I am the son of Saul, and typically when a new king comes into power, they kill everybody else from the family of the old king so that, you know, they didn't try to come back and say, hey, it belongs to us. So he said, when you become king, David, can you promise, can you make a covenant with me not to hurt my family? And David said, I promise. Now it'll come to play later. So just hold on to that thought for a couple more weeks. So he loses his family and friends running from Saul. Then it says here in the next thing, he loses his place of worship. In 1 Samuel 21 now we've already covered 2.5 chapters. He goes to the tabernacle, which we talked about that in the Dwell series. You can find that online as well at mc3church.org. But he goes to where the tabernacle is, which was the place of worship. It was the place where the people gathered together to worship God. And he goes there at Nob, and there's this priest there. His name is Ahimelech, which is fun to say. Ahimelech. Especially, see, I have to clear my throat every time. That's kind of funny. Ahimelech. So he goes to this priest and says, hey, look, you know, is there any bread that you can give me? And this is a really cool story because Jesus uses it later. And he says, you know, you can have the consecrated bread that belongs to the priest because right now you need it more than this ceremonial kind of thing. And we don't have time to get into that. So he gives him this bread. And then he says, thank you, but I have to run. I have to get out of here. He can't even stay at his place of worship. He can't worship God in this place. And later, Saul then finds out, this is kind of a couple chapters ahead, Saul finds out that Ahimelech helped out David. And so he goes to the tabernacle and says, you know, Ahimelech, I know this is the place where everybody worships the presence of God, worships God with the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant was there, Indiana Jones kind of stuff. And he says, this is the place of worship. And I hear that you helped David. And I'm jealous. I didn't say that. But David doesn't deserve any help from anybody else. And he said, that's it. And the priest was like, well, I was just trying to help someone. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? I'm the priest. I represent God and worship. Aren't I supposed to help other people? So he's like, nah. He says, all right, kill him. So he kills Ahimelech and all of Ahimelech's family, all of the priests in the tabernacle were killed by Saul, except for one son, Abiathar, who flees and runs to David and says, look, he killed everybody. And David said, you're safe with me. He doesn't like me either. And so now it's kind of cool because David's got his own priest. And that sounds sacrilegious, but it's not meant to be that way. But he has a priest that actually is able to act. There were part of the priestly garments were things called Urim and Thummim. And they were things where they would actually determine what God's will was. They could say, God, is this right? And it's, I don't want to say it was like a magic eight ball, but sort of something like that, where somehow, we don't know how, but God used these two items as part of the priestly garment to determine whether they should do something. So it's kind of cool because as the story goes on, and I'm not going to talk about those, but as you read the story, you'll see that David is constantly going, okay, God, what does God want us to do now? And Abiathar is like, well, let me tell you. And so he actually was listening to God's will, but he lost his place of worship. So then he goes from there, he flees, and he loses his dignity. So here's a man who has been, you know, called the next king. He's going to be the king. He has been anointed by God. He, in a miraculous, incredible way, defeats Goliath. He is the man. Everybody calls out how great he is, his tens of thousands. And he loses his dignity because he's running from Saul. He's like, where am I going to go? So he ends up going to Gath. Now, if you remember last week, because you were very observant, that there was a Philistine from Gath whose name was Goliath. And so David is actually fleeing to the home of Goliath to get away from Saul. And he goes there, and it's interesting in this passage here, and I got to go faster too, but when they get to this spot, when he gets to Gath, David's like, help me. And the king's like, all right, buddy, you know, whoever you are. And then people are like, wait a second. Isn't that the David that people were like saying, and this phrase comes up over and over, that Saul has slain his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands? I think that's him. He's the guy that killed Goliath. And suddenly David's like, I don't know. He starts drooling. It says he was marking things. I'm not sure what that meant. I did a little research into that. Can't find out what that means. I have a dog. I don't know what that... I'm not trying to make fun. He went to the point where he acted so insane that the king of Gath is like, get this guy out of here. I don't know what is wrong with him. I don't want him. Get him out of here. So David escaped with his life by pretending to be insane. And so then he was able to flee, but he lost his dignity. And then it goes on, and now he loses his comfort. Because it says here in the next couple chapters, in 22 to 23, that David had to go around and hide in the cliffs, in the rocks, in the caves, in the desert. That he didn't have a place to stay. It wasn't even a home, a village that he could hide to. He had to go and flee and hide in the desert. And so let's see, let me catch you up here. So what's interesting here is that it's David is starting to have this kind of Robin Hood thing go on, where he's like in Sherwood Forest of the desert, of the caves, and it says the outcasts and the losers all started gathering around him. Now, at the very end of the life of David, which we're going to kind of touch on briefly in a couple of weeks, it says there's a list of David's mighty men. There were these men that were considered these incredible, incredible, they would be considered the A-team of, if you weren't here last week, they were considered the A-team or the Mission Impossible, the IMF team. They were like the best of the best of the best. They were the Navy SEALs of David's time, and there was this list of these amazing, mighty men of valor, that these were incredible warriors. And it is said, now this isn't specifically in the Bible, but as they study the history, it seems that these men that later God was going to use in incredible ways for David as the king, spoiler, that later that these men are starting to gather now. So God is using this disaster in David's life to begin to gather something that God has planned way in the future for what David doesn't even realize what's going on. So he's gathering these men. He's fleeing in the middle of nowhere. So he doesn't have even comfort. He has nothing good, nothing nice, nowhere that he can be. And then it goes on and says, David loses his selfishness. In 1 Samuel 24, and I'm gonna make this story quick. You got to read the Bible. It's like, I am not... The guy went insane. Okay, he did hurl his spear. Like, here's what happened next. So David's hiding in the back of this deep cave with his men. And there's probably, and it's men and wife and women and children, but there were 400, about 400, 500 men at the time. So that means probably another 500 or so women and probably another, 10,000 children. I don't know. But they had a lot of kids. But so there's kind of, this is all the people. And there's this very deep cave and they're hiding in the back. And Saul is chasing David now. He's got his armies going after David because he is that jealous, that bitter, that spiteful that David is losing everything. This is the man that has slain his tens of thousands. This is the man that has killed Goliath, not because of his might, but because of God's might, because of his faith in God. He is fleeing. And there's this moment where they're in the hiding in the back of this cave because Saul's army and his people are coming up. And we're talking like, and I haven't been there, but you can talk to Scott and Michelle. I was actually talking to Michelle about this a little bit a couple months ago. But there's all these different crags and rocks and places where you can hide. It's a place where you can hide. And the word is often translated, the Hebrew word is stronghold, because it's a place where once you get there, you can't even, it's easy to defend. It's a safe place to be, at least that way. So these guys are hiding in the back of the cave. And out of all the caves, out of all the crags, out of all the nooks and crannies, Saul's got to go potty. And Saul, out of all this, chooses the cave that David's men are hiding in the back of. And so Saul, and again, this is in the Bible, Saul drops his drawers to do his thing. He is, let's say, defenseless. I mean, he is on so many levels. I don't know if you've ever tried to run with your pants around your ankles. Or your robe or your loins or whatever you had there. And so David's men were like, David, he's right there. Go kill him. This is God. And David goes up and he's like, yeah, sneaky, sneaky, sneaky. And he gets ready to kill him. And then he goes, and cuts off the corner of his robe. And it says at that moment, David was struck with guilt because he said, who am I to go against the one that God has set apart as king? This isn't about me. This isn't about my kingdom. This isn't about my power. This is about my God. And God said that Saul is the king, so it is not my job to take it, to take him out. And so then Saul leaves, goes to the bathroom, and then leaves out of the cave after that, pulls up his pants. And David's like, Saul, hey, just want you to know, I had a chance to kill you, but I didn't. Look at your robe. Missing something? And so at this moment, David, again, God is developing his character. Because sometimes God uses our disaster to develop our character. Sometimes those are the moments when we're going through these low times where it's like, this is awful, God's saying, because I'm doing something in here that you need for later. And a good king needs to have a good character. A good leader needs to be a person of integrity. And God knows that. And he's setting David up. He's creating something in David in this moment. So David loses his selfishness. He says, no, wait, this isn't about me. This is about God. And in the middle of our disaster, isn't it easy to strike out? You don't know. You don't deserve. And David had the opportunity to strike out exactly at the one who was causing this problem and step back and said, you know what? I'm trusting God here. I'm trusting God here. This is God's story, not mine. And I just want to encourage you, if you're in the middle of a disaster, don't start biting the heads off of people around you. It's easy. It's easy because we're frustrated. But can we step back and say, you know what? This is God's thing, and I'm going to trust him even in this moment. So then it goes on here. And so how many chapters have we covered? I don't know. Maybe I can't do the math. That's too much mathing. Maybe six. So the next thing is that David loses his rights. David loses his rights. And I don't have time to get into this whole story. Again, you can read it in the Bible. But basically, when David and his troops, and let me time out. What we're covering in these chapters, they assume was around 10 years of David's life. He is fleeing and on the run for about 10 years. They did the math about his age when he becomes king and some other things that are happening. And they say it's about 10 years that this is going on. So this isn't like, yeah, my disaster. It was a tough week, tough month, tough season. It was a tough decade for David. And so he gets to this spot where they're out, and at one point there's this guy named Nabal, and his shepherds are out in this field, and it sounds like some things were, people were trying to attack them, and David's like, don't bother this Judy, this Israelite guy, you know, we're going to protect him. And they protected him and cared for it, not him, but his people and his shepherds and his sheep. And then later it was time for the harvest when everybody celebrates, and they give out gifts and they make money and all that from shearing the sheep and all that. And so David goes to Nabal and says, look, hey, we protected your sheep. Is there any way you can help us out with some stuff? And Nabal's like, I'm not helping you with nothing. And David's like, what? Seriously? Like, this wasn't like, oh, here, let me have a quarter. It wasn't like they were, it seemed to imply that they were seriously helping out Nabal and his people and didn't have to do that. And David's like, you're not going to do this for me? And so David's like, all right, well, then we'll kill you. That's what you do, I guess. And then it says his wife comes out and says, look, my husband's an idiot. His name means fool. Like, for real, that's what Nabal means. It means fool. So don't name your kids that. And he says, "He, you're right. You deserve us to be kind to you. Here, we're so sorry." And God ended up striking Nabal dead. He fell dead because of his disobedience to God. And it's this really interesting story there, and you can read it yourself. But the point is that David had the right to something. He's like, you know what? I don't even have that now. I thought I was helping a guy out. I thought I was going to scratch his back. He scratched mine. I don't even have that. So then David's disaster goes on. And make sure I'm covering everything there. Oh, by the way, Abigail, who is Nabal's wife, does become David's wife. He dies, so she becomes David's wife. David's got a couple of wives already at this point. His original wife was given away to someone else. And this is, just to be clear, this was commonly practiced, but not appropriate. It was against God's law to have more than one wife, but they would do it because everybody else around them did it. And so he's got a couple of wives, and this is going to become an issue in a couple of weeks as well. And then the next thing is that David loses his selfishness again. So here, time is going on. They hear that David's men are following them again. And it says that at this point, they find out that Saul's army is camping out in the middle of this field in this valley. And David's like, hey, who wants to go with me and see Saul? And one of his buddies is like, yeah, I'll go with you, David. So they go down and they sneak in the middle of the night while everyone is asleep in the camp. They go up next to Saul and get to him right there. And what is next to his head? Saul's favorite thing, his spear. And so his buddy's like, David, why don't I just take the spear? I won't even do it twice. It'll be like, dead. He will be done. And David says, look, we've been here before. This isn't mine. This is God's thing. And he's trying to defend his case to Saul, too. So it says he takes this spear. Finally, I think David's like, good riddance with this stinking spear. So he takes the spear and a water jug that was by his head, goes up on a hill and calls out to his army commander and says, hey, Abner, how's it going protecting Saul? He's like, who are you? He's like, oh, I'm the guy that has Saul's spear and his water jug. Oh, crap. And Saul says, is that you, David? Again, this is a conversation that happens over and over again. Oh, David, what are you doing? Oh, I was just about to kill you, but I'm not going to because it's not my thing, it's God's thing. I'm not really chasing you. Why are you chasing me? What's the deal here? Oh, I promise I won't be after you. We're going to be after him. And this happens over again. So again, he gives up his right. He gives up his way to take away, you know, this isn't about me. This is God's thing. And gives up that moment because God, again, is developing his character in this moment. The next thing, I don't know where we are, I think 7th or 8th, and the next chapter, we see that David loses his identity. So at this point, this has been going on. He is fleeing from Saul's armies. He is fleeing with his people. And there's a one spot where it says that they're walking around one side of a mountain, and David and his army is walking around the other side. It's like a Scooby-Doo scene. I'm pretty sure one goes into one cave, and they come out of the other cave over here, and one comes out of that cave. But they're fleeing, and David's kind of like, you know what? Saul's going to catch me someday and kill me. So time has passed here. You know, we don't know how many years, but it's been some time since he killed Goliath. So he goes back to the Philistines. And at this point, everybody knows that Saul is after David. Even the enemy knows that. And so he goes to the king of the Philistines and says, look, can I become one of your people? Can I have a village in this town, in your kingdom? And the king's like, well, hey, a friend of my friend is my enemy. Wait. An enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's how it goes. And he's like, that's fine. You know what? You stay here. I get it. And he is so offensive to Saul that he's not going to do anything bad. So he gives him a town. And so David is not even an Israelite anymore. His generations, we talked about the very first week about Obed being the father of Jesse and how Obed was the child of Boaz and how the whole book of Ruth was about developing this line of David. And now David's not even an Israelite anymore because he's in the middle of this disaster. He's in the middle of this hard time. And so he's not even known as an Israelite. He's a Philistine. It said that he would take his armies out and go out on raids against enemies of Israel, different other nations, and then come back and the king would be like, "Hey, what'd you do, David?" "Oh, I just killed some Israelites." "They did. Oh, they did. And so the king of the Philistines is like, "All right, cool. Good deal. This guy's killing them." So he just kept like, he was like a mercenary, I guess you could say. He was working, pretending like he was taking out Israelites, but instead just taking out other nations and other groups of people that were against Israel. So he doesn't fight. And then finally, in the last chapter here, 1 Samuel 30, he loses his supporters. Because he's in this rough spot. He's fleeing from the guy that he was supposed to be protecting, that was supposed to be honoring him. Everyone is against him. God, it seems like he's alone. He's not in a comfortable spot. He's got to flee from the troops. He's living in the enemy's state. And that's a big deal, by the way, to not be considered an Israelite. Like, this wasn't like, I'm just going to, live in Canada for a while. Like, no. This was a huge national identity thing for David. And so he's at the spot where they're getting ready to go out to fight with the Philistines. And the Philistine leaders are like, that's David back there. And the king's like, "Oh, I know. He's good. We're cool." And he's like, "No, I don't trust him. Why don't you just send them back? Because if we get in the middle of the battle with the Israelites, because now they're going to battle against the Israelites, David might turn on us, and that would be bad. We don't want to fight a two-front war." Been there, done that. Talk to the Nazis about it. It did not go well. And so we don't want to do that. So they said, "Okay, you guys go back to your camp, go back to your village." And so they get back to their village. While they were out getting ready to go to battle, their village was raided. All of the women and children were taken. All of the plunder was taken. And so here you have David doing the right thing, trying to honor God, following him. And now he comes back to their village and all the things that they knew, that he and his men knew, were gone. And now his men were talking about stoning David. It's like, it's time to kill this guy. Hey, I don't know what he's been doing, but now we've lost the only thing that we thought we had. And so even his own men turn on him. And then he goes to God and says, "God, should we go after that?" And Abiathar is like, "Yeah, actually, God says you can." So he goes after, and they actually get all of the women, all of the plunder back from this raiding party. So they get it all back, but even his own people are against him. And so David is in the middle of this awful 10-year-long disaster. Now, I want you to know one more thing, too. That battle of the Philistines were getting ready to fight against the Israelites, it continued. The battle took place. David wasn't a part of it. And in this battle, a guy named Saul was killed, along with his son Jonathan. And so now the king is dead. But we'll have to pick up that story next week. But in the middle of the disaster here, David had to trust God. And so for you, when you're after God, you rest in him in the middle of your disaster. So here's the hook. Here's the catch. Here's the deal with David. Because it's like, "Yeah, David, that was really miserable. That was really awful." Psalm 57, verses 1 to 11. If you have the YouVersion app, you have a Bible, usually there's a heading on a lot of the Psalms. It kind of describes the title, tells you a little bit about what that Psalm was about, if they know, or who wrote it, and things like that. And Psalm 57 says, the very top, this is not the actual verse, but the heading about it says, "For the director of music, to the tune of Do Not Destroy," because we all know that one, and it says, "of David," which means David wrote this. It was a miktam, like you do. And then it says, "when he had fled from Saul into the cave." So this psalm of David, and of course the after God, after the point stations, are all about psalms that David wrote. But this psalm, along with the one you're going to look at today, was written by David in the middle of the disaster. So this isn't a guy that was like, "Yeah, that was really stinks. That was awful. Now I'm the king and I'm going to write a psalm saying how great God is." No, in the cave, he is writing this. Get that. Because in the middle of the disaster, he rested in God. And so we'll come back to reading it. We're going to skip two slides to the because I have time. Hiding in the wings. So we'll break this psalm down. We'll come back to all that. I just didn't read it all right now. Hiding in the wings. Because David is here writing this psalm, hiding in the wings of his father. In the midst of the disaster, he is resting in God. So in the middle of your disaster, here's some things that you can learn, that we can learn from David. The first thing is don't run. Rest. Because how often we're like, no, I need to fix it. I need to make it right. I need to solve that person. I need to kill that king. I need to, whatever it is, to get it right. And God says, no, just rest in me because I've got it and I'm in control. So don't run from your disaster. Rest in God in the middle of it. And that's what he says in the first verse here of Psalm 57. He says, oh, good, we're getting crazy. He says, have mercy on me, my God. Take mercy on me. For in you I take refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. So here is David in the middle of this saying, God, I'm going to rest in you. I'm going to rest in your wings. I'm going to rest under you. You are going to protect me, and I'm going to rely on you. I'm not going to run. I'm going to rest. And sometimes you need to just rest. Stop fixing it. Stop solving it. Stop curing it. Stop running from it. And just rest and let God cover you and let him work it out. And that's what David did. The second thing here is in the middle of your disaster, don't complain. Trust. I mean, come on. How many times do we whine about what God didn't do for us? Oh, if God loved me, if God cared, this wouldn't have happened. Really? Talk to David about that. Is that true? Is that how David felt? No, David, instead of complaining, instead of saying, why, God? What's your problem? He trusted. And sometimes in our disasters, all the time, we need to step back and stop complaining to God and blaming him and making him the bad guy when he says, I'm here, I've got this, trust me. Because sometimes in the disaster, God is developing something in us that he's going to use later because you're going to be the king. Maybe God is doing something and creating a group of 400 or more mighty men that God's going to use to fight battles for you down the road. So sometimes we need to stop complaining and just trust. And that's what David says here in verses 2 to 3. He goes on and says, I cry out to God Most High. Right? Next slide. It's up there. There we go. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends forth his love and his faithfulness. And that word love is this Hebrew word, chesed. And it's a huge word in the Old Testament. And in the New Testament, it gets translated into charis, which is grace. Undeserved favor. And David is saying, look, God, I am here. I'm crying out to you. And I'm just trusting your love and faithfulness. I don't know what's going on. I don't get it. I don't understand. But I know that you are in control. God is faithful. And that little eagle ECC1 could have been like, oh, it's windy and it's swaying. Stop it. Meanwhile, Mama Bird is going, I know it is. And I'm protecting you. I know it is. And I've got you under my wings. And so when it comes to our disasters, we need to not complain. But we need to trust that God is faithful. He is always faithful. He will continue to be faithful. And he never, never, ever, ever will deny himself. He will always be true and faithful to us. We need to trust. Here's a third thing. In the middle of your disaster, don't sound spiritual. Be real. And if you've never gone to church, if this is your first time, first month, first week, whatever, first year in church, this isn't a big deal. But if you grew up in church, can I just say to you, stop being so fake. Don't sound spiritual. Like, we don't have a softball game today. I'm going to take a nap. But kind of one of the jokes is nobody tells anybody on the team that I'm a pastor. Because let me tell you how you kill a conversation. hey, how's it going? All right, good. Yeah, you like that team? Oh, I really like to watch football. Yeah. Oh, so what do you do? Well, I'm a pastor. Oh. Well, the Lord giveth and taketh away. And I felt that this McDonald's was manna from the Lord. And like, what? Do you like Big Macs? Yeah. Oh, cool. Like, and people get all spiritual around me. And I just, can we just be real? Because it's okay to be real. And this is what happened in Psalm 57. As David is writing from the cave, as he's writing in the middle of his disaster, he says to God, I'm in the midst of lions. I am forced to dwell among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Then in verse 6, he says, they spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. He's saying, God, this is hard. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. He's being real. He says, this is hard. God, I know you've got it. God, I trust you, and I'm hiding in the wings. But let's just be honest, God, this sucks. This hurts. I'm not having a good time here. And I think there's something appropriate and frankly honoring to God when we're just real with God, who knows our hearts anyway. We're not deceiving Him. We're deceiving us. And sometimes we just need to be real and be honest with God. We did a whole series called Wounded, which was the cross there a couple of years ago. It was about the life of Habakkuk. And if you read the headings of Habakkuk, it says Habakkuk's complaint, Habakkuk's second complaint. He's complaining to God. He's being real with God. And you'll find that you'll even find Jesus not complaining, but going, God, Father, if there is any other way for you to save eternity, to save all of humanity, please do it, because this is going to be hard. But nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. Even Jesus praying to his Father going, this is hard. So it's okay to be real in the middle of our disaster. The third thing, or fourth thing, I guess we are here, is don't self-seek. Glorify God. And I think now we're starting to get personal. It's easy to be like, yeah, I'm not going to run. I'll rest in Jesus. Yeah, he'll help me. I'm not going to complain. I'll just trust him. But we want our way. We want to fix it. We want, if we're trusting God, we're trusting, and let's just be real here. When we say we trust God, we're trusting that God is going to make it work for me. That God is going to make it the way I want it to be. I'm trusting God. Why? Because I know he's going to make it the way I want it. What if God's way isn't what you want? And I think we just need to do a gut check here and say, wait a second. Is this about me? Which we talked about last week. It's not me, it's God. Or is this about God? And it's easy to look at our situation and want it our way. And you know what? Sometimes the marriage doesn't come back together. Sometimes they die. Sometimes your credibility is ruined. Sometimes you lose the job. Sometimes there's no way back. And I want you to understand that it's okay. Because God is still in control. God still is faithful. We just need to make sure we're not going to these moments going, okay, God, I want my way. I trust you to make what I want. I trust you to give me what I deserve. And what did David say? Twice in this psalm, in the middle and the end, in verses 5 and 11, he says, be exalted, O me, O David. May I be exalted. May I be the biggest, the best, the most powerful. May I get what I want. That is not what he said. He said, be exalted, O God, above the heavens, above everything. Let your glory be over all the earth. Again at the end, summarizing, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over the earth. God, it is about you and your glory and not me and mine. And when we can get into that moment, it's easier too, because we go, I don't need to fix this. I don't need to solve this, because God's got it in his hand, and whatever he's going to do, he's going to do. And I'm just going to trust him, that he knows what's going on, that he knows I'm going to need a mighty man of valor to fight the battles for me decades from now when I'm the king. That he knows that I need this character to enter into this situation where I'm going to be the leader of that. That he knows what's going on. And so we need to be able to say, in our disaster, be exalted, O God. Not be exalted me, but him. And then finally, And this is where it gets crazy. Don't despair. Celebrate. David is fleeing from Saul. He's lost his comfort. He's lost his family. He's lost his dignity. He's lost all of these things that we've gone about over about. And in the middle of this, instead of going, God, I'm just done. I'm tired. Can't handle you anymore. His response is to celebrate. Why? Because he knows, you know what, I've got nothing else, but I have you, God. And if you've got nothing else, and all you've got is the creator of the universe, the sustainer of life, the one that sent his son to die for you, the one that can walk on the water, the one that can calm the storm, the one that can fix, that can heal, that can make it, if that's all you've got, that is okay. And that is worth celebrating. And that's what David says here at the end. This is, understand, this isn't a guy writing when things are good. This is a guy in the cave. And in 7 through 10, he says, my heart, O God, is steadfast. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. The word means to praise, to honor God. Awaken my soul. Awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I'm going to get up singing. Because God, you are good. And no matter how my disaster looks, you are still good. And you are worthy of my praise because you are so wonderful and you love me. I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples, for great is your love reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the sky. David says, I'm going to celebrate because I don't know what else is going on, but I know one thing. You are good. You are love. You are faithful, O God. And so I'm going to sing. People can be like, shut up, David. I'm trying to sleep here. He's like, oh, I'm celebrating. I'm waking up, celebrating the fact that God is on my side. Because God says, I am his child. I am who he says I am. I am not forsaken. I am not abandoned. I am his. You are his. We are his. And so we can be in a disaster and we can go, okay, God, I'm going to rest under your wings and know it's scary out there, but I've got you. And I am under your wings. I'm not under my own wings because my wings are feeble. But I'm under your wings. And so we can celebrate that. And I know that's crazy. And you're going to have people that might even go, what is, yeah, that's not right. You should really be upset. You should be angry at God. You should be angry at that person for what they did to you. Let's just step back and say, no, you know what? God's in control. And I can rest in his wings. I can hide under his wings. So in the middle of your disaster, don't run, rest. Don't complain, trust. Don't sound spiritual, just be real. Don't self-seek, but glorify God. And don't despair. Celebrate. Because you've got God. And David, in the middle of his disaster, was able to write this psalm, and actually another one that you're going to have a chance to respond to in a moment. In the middle of the cave, in the middle of the disaster. So when you're after God, you rest in him. Not after the disaster, in the middle of it. And your disaster, I don't even want you to look at the people around you. Because these go, oh wow, they have it really bad. Mine's nothing. No, if it's bad, hard to you, it's a disaster. And you can rest in God in that. So when you're after God, you rest in him in the middle of the disaster. Here's a spot in David's life, 10 years of disaster. 10 years of hard times. And he did the right thing. Get that? He isn't running away because he disobeyed God. Because he cheated and snuck up behind Goliath and stabbed him in the back of the head. He did the right thing and he still ended up in the middle of a disaster. Because God was doing something in him. And God said, I want you to rest in the shadow of my wings. Rest in me. In the middle of your disaster.